to call the April 11th Law and Rules and Government Services Committee to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag, United States of America, and to the Republic, which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Roll call.
Chair Kovacs.
Present.
Deputy Chair Levine.
Here.
Legislator Gavarik.
Present.
Legislator Harmon.
Present.
Legislator Hansett.
Here.
Legislator Kitchen. Legislator Uchitel.
Here.
And Legislative Chair Criswell.
Here.
You, have six-ish? One absent?
Sounds sufficient to have a meeting. Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the February 8th meeting minutes? I'm sorry, it's not February 8th. March 14th.
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none. Motion passes. I'm going to go to item 4 on the agenda. We're going to take this out of order so that the commissioners of elections can take care of their business. This is resolution number 201, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to sign agreements with various school districts in Ulster County for the use of polling equipment and material, Ulster County Board of Elections. Motion to adopt. Is there a second?
Second.
Either commissioner would like to say a few words about this?
All I'd like to say is we're probably one of the few counties in the Hudson Valley that's still actively working with our school districts to provide this service. We're essentially acting as a vendor on their behalf to provide them with the equipment, as well as access to our list of trained inspectors who will then work their school board elections. And they're all certified by us on our equipment. We've actually had school districts outside of Ulster County reaching out to us, trying to see if they could borrow or become a vendor and use our equipment as well. Just fortunately, due to the fact that we use a different machine, we aren't able to at the moment. But I see this as an opportunity for us to do a service for our school districts, and we need Ashley back so she can run the point on us again. But it's going well.
Any other questions? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none. Motion carries. Just to wrap up any board election business, at the end of the agenda, I have an informational bullet point for a county of Onondaga versus state of New York. This is a lawsuit that was filed recently by the Onondaga County government against state of New York. This has to do with the even-numbered election year law, which goes into effect basically next year when local offices, including county legislature, are up for election, maybe up for election for a year short of their full term. I'm just not asking for any action to be taken on this, but I just wanted to bring this to everyone's attention that there are some court cases to monitor over the next year. And I would note, I have read in the Daily Freeman that the Dutchess County Legislature approved worth about $100,000 to allocate towards their own court case. So I just want to bring that to everyone's attention, and I don't know if there are any comments by the Board of Elections.
I don't really have much to say about it.
Yeah, it's really just the fact that this is a growing trend. There are lots of conversations that are still being had at various levels, whether it's the municipal levels or the county levels, as to what actions can or can't be taken on behalf of individuals who are interested in seeing this law change. There is activity going on in Nassau County. They are actively also seeking individuals to sign on to their lawsuit. And at this moment, Dutchess is going to be investigating. Onondaga has formally filed. And there is also, I believe, Rensselaer, maybe one other county that are currently investigating what their options are and how they proceed if this is something they wish to push back on.
Any questions for the commissioners?
I missed the first part. You asked about
what we're hearing, how it's going to be. I was under the impression it's going to save money, but now we're hearing it may cost more money. They asked that.
Didn't touch on that just yet, but here in Ulster County, due to the current structure in which we have elected officials, it would absolutely not save us money. We would still be required to have all poll sites open in odd years. Right now, any given election is running anywhere between $250,000 to about $350,000, depending on the size and scope of it. But much of that cost is fixed and not variable. So regardless of the fact, if there is a countywide election, that fixed cost is there, and we don't have much wiggle room, whether it's closing the poll site or just staffing less people at the poll sites. We still have a bare minimum that we have to require that is a significant cost.
But what's different about the makeup in Ulster County to Dutchess County? What's the difference if Dutchess is claiming it's going to be more expensive for them to consolidate? And have that much work in a set, and then downtime, I guess, is their point where they're going to try to staff less, but then need to staff more. But why are we, how are we structured differently?
So I think the argument could be made that
they
would cost us more because in years like this, because they're presidential, we prefer to staff up with additional members at each poll sites that are known as greeters to simply help with the flow of traffic and get people through. That would be more consistent. We would still have to meet that higher threshold and want to provide that better of a service at the poll sites. So we probably would see an increase in cost and within like a four-year cycle. And that's how I would generally want to view it, is in a four-year cycle, what would the total cost be over a four-year period? I would say we would definitely see an increase in Ulster County for election costs, not a decrease.
The printing costs would also go up. The length of the ballot.
Yes.
Is such that
that's some of the stuff they mentioned in Dutchess. Because when we had the debate on the memorializing letter, we were all under the impression that one of the positives going forward with these changes was it was going to save money, but it's actually going to cost money.
Correct.
It'll cost more.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll just remind everyone that to address questions to the chair, we can ask the commissioners to step in if to answer. Any other comments on this issue, questions? Thank you. Appreciate it. We're going to return to the agenda, and item one, resolution number 78, establishing a policy requiring nonprofit vendors to comply with applicable financial reporting and tax filing regulations. So Legislator Collins, like to make any comments?
Second.
Well, I think there's some amendments.
So this is the resolution we've been looking at for the last couple months. There's been a modification to it. Basically, a modification makes it effective beginning of 2025 to give the current nonprofits a chance to catch up. And it's enforceable by the county, by us requiring from the county evidence that they have filed and that the filings are current when we sign the contract. So it's that makes it more enforceable and makes it more able to be monitored. Other than that, it's the same as it has been for the last couple months. I think that addresses the concerns that were expressed at the session, the last session.
So do we have a motion to adopt the amendments as presented? Motion?
Second.
Second. Okay. Any discussion?
This is just on the amendment?
This is on the amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, seeing none? Motion to adopt the amendments as presented passes. Discussion on the resolution. Legislator Nolan.
So I think these amendments improve this quite a great deal. I'm still worried that we are potentially passing something that will cause us difficulty contracting with nonprofit organizations that provide essential services. And I think that we are not in this doing something that I think Legislator Collins would like to do, certainly I would like to do, and I think the body might want to do, which is help nonprofits that are providing services, and especially those providing essential services, to do their work better and to meet these requirements. So With these changes, I guess I can agree, but I would prefer to know before voting on this how many nonprofits we contract with at present that would fail on this to qualify, and how many of those might have been sole bidders on any contract for services that we offer. So rather than move it forward in the absence of knowing that, I would like to charge somebody in the executive's branch to find that information and bring it to us so that we know. And I would also like us to look at the contracts that we're offering and whether or not they offer sufficient administrative support that nonprofits that are doing a tremendous amount of work can't have the staff they need to comply with. It's not just our requirements, it's state and federal requirements. I understand that. But the organizations that accept these contracts may not be in a position to lobby for greater administrative costs, and maybe we should build in a line that is actually for this sort of compliance activity and make it one of the deliverables on the on a contract now or future contract.
Yeah, in general, I think we need to do more of this. Government on all levels is now contracting and spending billions and billions of dollars with not-for-profits in a way. We're outsourcing more and more services to these not-for-profits, and I think there's a lack of oversight. So I think we have to do things like this, and for me, a supporter of it, I just wanted to make sure it was enforceable and beyond people like you and I that value this approach being here, that it continues to happen even once we're gone, and that it's functionally part of the entire process. So I wanted to get the exec's opinion like we got the other day. They had concerns about the enforceability and who was the logistics of who's going to do what. I will just say as well that I think we need to get an opinion before my colleague speaks. I mean, this could directly affect whether a specific not-for-profit gets funding from us. They've had some issues dealing with things related to this. And now that there's a financial relationship that we're all finding out about, it's probably something that should be, we should kick off to the lawyers to see if we should be, somebody should be abstaining here. Gotta say it, because it's true. But question over through the chair, over to the exec side. Does this amendment alleviate your concerns, and you are now comfortable with the logistics of this going forward if we pass it?
Sure. So I can take that. So having the January 1st, 2025 date in here really does help. It gives us the time to work through that policy. To Legislator Nolan's point, at that point, we could bring that back for the body to review. I absolutely agree. We want to include in here who is going to make that confirmation, say that we have the data on hand. How are we going to hold that kind of final payment? So those types of things, I think, we'd want to be working out. This date helps get us there, and I think that is something we can work through. We are meeting with Legislator Collins on this on Monday, I think, is our meeting. So, again, I think this absolutely puts it in a place where we could work through it.
Thank you. Legislator Collins.
I want to address one thing Legislator Nolan talked about, which is financial incentives to do things. I asked the legislative assistants about that. That's a different bill. And if we do that, we can do it in a different way. It's not appropriate to add that to this bill. That was their opinion on this, which I agree with. This is just about making sure that they have filings done. And I think that that's a very clear thing. And again, it's not our requirement, it's a federal requirement. So we're just monitoring the federal requirement that they meet those dates.
I would just like to note, I am aware of one major provider for the county right now who is not caught up on their filings, that is Family of Woodstock. We don't collect them, and it's not a question we commonly ask, but I had a conversation with the executive director there, and he told me that. I want to note, that's the 2022 filing. So given that a lot of the contracts are executed in the beginning of the year, the previous year's filings wouldn't be available. We're really talking about 18-month-old filings at this point. And you know, it's a real look back. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Thank you. Lizard Collins.
That's an important point because most filings are in September, October of, if they do an extension, September, October, will be contractor looking at them in January. So they have months before that they're due. So anyone that, I haven't said Family Woodstock before, but now that it's out, Family Woodstock is a year and a half behind. So that's going to be a significant default on their part. And they're working on it, and there's issues, and there's reasons why it happened. But, you know, I want to make sure that they understand that they need to be caught up and stay caught up.
Later.
I just want to point out, just like big picture, the lack of administrative capacity at these nonprofits and the lack of capacity outside of the service that they provide for everything else that happens there. That's the whole reason we contract with them in the first place. That's why we can, that's why it's attractive to contract with the nonprofit sector, because they're able to offer cheaper. They're able to offer cheaper by not paying, you know, high wages that we would pay a CSEA employee for to do a similar job, and to, you know, to not have administrative oversight to run things, you know, in a tight ship. Like, that's in a way what we're buying. And so there is a cost to saving money going to these nonprofits. And like, as with everything, we should always be thinking with all of these contracts about what's appropriate to do in-house, because I think the trend over the last many, many decades, and it began under, you know, Reagan we talk about small government. This is how we've achieved small government, was going to the nonprofit sector, doing things really, really cheaply. And if it's causing problems, you know, that's an issue of our own creation, and but one that we're, you know, incentivized to go for.
Leslie Malone.
I disagree with all of that. The government's gotten much bigger. Every year our government's bigger on every level than it was. The not-for-profits are extensions of our government, when many of these not-for-profits work exclusively with just government money. And the idea that they're just saving money with administrative costs, and that's why they're not filing their paperwork, that's certainly an optimistic way of looking at it, because there could be incompetence all over these not-for-profits and lack of services, in the same way that they're not performing on the administrative side. Their service side may be struggling, which is what we're hearing from a lot of these contracts. I've had complaints across the board with family of certain that they're doing great work in certain areas, other areas they're really lacking, which is why we have to look into it. I think it's alarming to find out that things aren't being filed and they're not following their finances correctly in a lot of these not-for-profits. So, and I think we need to expect that. If they can't do that, we shouldn't be working with them, and we should not be assuming that they're just saving money there so they can put all their energy into these great services. I don't buy it.
Since you referenced Nick and I,
I'm going to ask, Nolan, did you want to speak?
If he has a direct response.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I would just say yes and to that. I mean, I agree with you. I think that there's an incentive all across the board for them to not, you know, they're trying to apply for grants that and deliver things at a lowest cost as possible. And when we send these RFPs out, we're hoping to see them come back very low. We want to see these contracts have as little to administrative as possible, and you know, that's why you know, it is part of the bigger picture issue with the nonprofit sector that is a problem. And I want to be clear that I see it as a problem, and I think we should all see it as a problem. It's like, you know, plugging holes in the system that we have left open by the, you know, our government moving out of things like mental health services and things like that have happened over decades. So I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think the points are actually in harmony.
Let's hear Nolan.
So my perspective on how nonprofits operate is not based on optimism or any kind of emotion. It's based on my 25 plus years of experience with multiple nonprofits of all different sizes in many different sectors, and my experience on this legislature looking at contracts where we routinely do award contracts with 10 to 15% administrative costs, knowing that in commercial sector, those contracts would have 35% in administrative costs. And some federal and less state, but some federal grants do allow that. And when you put into a sign a contract with a group where they're going to have 35% administrative costs, they do more administrative work. That's what they're going to bill against the contract. So this is not some kind of impression. This is looking at data and looking at the incentive structures just exactly as Legislator Uchitel described them. And if we want nonprofits that we're working with to do better on this, we can structure those contracts in such a way that would cost us a little more. And maybe that is the place where we should do it. A lot of these nonprofits do have people who are willing to work for less money as long as they're doing work that they can feel really good about. And I think the nonprofits we contract with do feel good about the work they do. So I don't hear them asking for more money for salaries for the most part. And they're not even really, I'm bringing this, because we are saying we're going to increase the requirement, you know, for what they can do to have a contract with us. Can we also make sure that they have the resources to do that? And doing it in a separate resolution is fine, but or policy of some sort, doesn't necessarily have to be a resolution, I think makes sense. But I think we should do it if we're going to ratchet up. The federal government will revoke a nonprofit status for 3 years of not filing. This resolution would basically make a nonprofit ineligible if they're 18 months behind. So it's actually, you know, a pretty stiff, very high bar that we're setting with this, I think, even though, you know, it sounds like it's not because it's a yearly requirement. The consequences for a nonprofit with the federal government are not nearly at this level.
Yeah, I mean, Legislator Nolan tied it in at the end there by saying that this is a requirement. So I just wanted to make that very clear. They're required to do this paperwork. This is not like we're asking them to do something additional that they don't have to do. We want it sooner than the feds. I don't think we should hold ourselves as the Fed is the standard. I think that's probably not a good example to use as what the standard should be, 3 years. 18 months is a long time. To me, when they submit their proposals to us for approval with these contracts, I'm sure they figured in the cost of electric into that contract that they submitted to us. They should be figuring in the cost of them, making sure that they have the paperwork filed on time to us within a year, 12 months, whatever, 18 months, whatever it is, they can figure that in when they submit their proposals. To me, this is not onerous. This is good government. This is us keeping an eye on contracts and making sure people that we're not being, money is not being misused.
Need a motion to adopt the resolution as amended. Is there a second? Thank you. Any further discussion?
I do want to just, I support this as well, and I hope my comments didn't make anyone think otherwise. But we could potentially, we hope that we're going to get answers to some of these questions about like how many vendors that wouldn't be in compliance are sole providers, and Family Woodstock is one of them. We know that they're, you know, one of the largest providers. Like, we just have to, the timing of advancing this before having those answers is a little bit concerning. If we were to end up in a situation where on January 1st, we have to like find providers that are gonna fulfill these services that were state mandated or federally mandated to provide, you know, that could be just something I wanna throw out there.
Those are your comments.
I was on the board of Family. That's how I know this is an issue for Family. I resigned that on effective December 31st of last year, before it became a legislator. So I understand exactly where they are with this process. They're expecting to file a 2022 this month or next month. So they're expecting it fairly soon. They're expecting the 2023 to follow about 4 or 5 months after that, and they expect to be in compliance with the 2023 filing date with the extension. So I think that they should be able to cover this and be able to get there in time. So it should not be a concern for Family of Woodstock if they can follow the plan that they put forth. The issue that they had was that they had lost the finance director for a while, they'd lost members of the finance team, as many but in the county, we've fallen into. So they have a finance director now, I understand, and they have a finance team getting this work done. So I'm confident they'll be able to meet the 2025 deadline for this.
I have a question now through the chair to Mr. Collins. You said that family or any nonprofit can file an extension. How long is that extension good for?
I believe it's 6 months, just like a personal extension.
So that's, we have the 18 months.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all opposed? I'm sorry. All in favor of the resolution as amended?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Thank you. Resolution number 155, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 2 of 2024, a local law amending Article 30, Commission of Human Rights of the Ulster County Charter and the Ulster County Administrative Code, and Chapter 216, Human Rights of the Code of the County of Ulster, in relation to the number of members and appointment structure of the Commission on Human Rights, Tuesday, May 14, 2024, at 7 p.m.
I'm looking for a postponement. I got several amendments somewhere.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on this?
I'll second that motion, but I do want to discuss a little bit.
Okay. Actually,
I thought Joe wanted a postponement.
Yeah, but you can't make a motion. John
is doing a very right. Motion.
Just do that?
Yes.
And second. Your second. Yeah. Thank you. Discussion. Go ahead. Let's do it.
I'm curious if how this comports with the recommendations that we got from the Charter Revision Commission on this particular topic.
That's one of the things we're going to try to work in. Some of these things
were similar, but I've talked to a couple of the former members that were reminded me that we put that up and we didn't pass because it was lumped in. It was something that I think had unanimous support for the most part, but it was lumped in with the planning board, so it ended up dying on the vine. So I'm going back and I'm kind of starting from scratch. A couple of these things are going to change. There's going to be two things added, but I'll talk to you and I'll run it by you guys, anybody that's
interested. Yeah, and I'll just say as an aside, like I wonder if we as a committee should take up that legislation, that package of legislation, and not do what is happening here. Not that I have a problem with you bringing this forward, but we're kind of leaving it to individual legislators to bring forward the pieces of legislation that were left to die on the vine from that package that was defeated because of the planning changes. There was a lot that was advanced. We wouldn't be in the situation with the medical director if that hadn't been allowed to die on the vine like that. So those things are going to keep coming up. I'd rather just see us take things before there's an issue on the table, which is the whole point of there being a periodic review of the charter.
Thank you. Having served on the Human Rights Commission, I'm deeply concerned that we get this right, and so I've been looking at county human rights laws from not only across New York State but farther, and I think we can do better than Band-Aid around the edges. I think that we can work with the executive to come up with a more robust, comprehensive, and effectual human rights law. So something is better than nothing, but perhaps we can actually just be more complete than this.
Sorry.
Yep. Thank you. I appreciate that, and I welcome the opportunity to work with you on that because we've been having a lot of discussions within the commission currently. They've been working on their bylaws. We've been discussing with the county attorney's office. They saw some parts of the client law that are not as fleshed out as they need to be. So if we could coordinate those.
Great.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, on the motion to postpone. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Opposed, seeing none. Motion postponed. Passes. Thank you. All right. Number three, resolution number 168, adopting proposed local law number 1 of 2024, a local law amending Article 3, hotel and motel room occupancy tax of the Code of the County of Ulster in relation to determination of taxable rent.
Is there a motion by Legislator Kitchen? Motion to adopt?
Yes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Legislator Hanson. Discussion? Legislator Collins.
That's okay. With your permission.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. I think a lot of us already have one.
Okay. Anyone ever gonna need another?
Back behind.
Thank you. We got some.
Over there. Give it back. So I'm opposed to this change, and I'm going to walk through why I'm opposed to this change. So first, I want to look at how this actually works. And how this actually works is something that I didn't know when I first came in. Obviously, I'm a new legislator, so I just wanted to familiarize myself. So I had to go through how the law works and how the allocation of taxes actually work for an all-inclusive. So as you all know, in 2023, the occupancy tax was 2% countywide. That was applied differently based on what the services were of a particular hotel or all-inclusive. With an all-inclusive, they were apportioned 40% of that 2% as the occupancy tax, making an effective tax for them of 0.8%, which means for a $1,000 bill, the tax was $8. In 2024, that got changed to a 4% tax, he says on page 2, 4% tax is also apportioned 40% for the room, which gives an effective tax for the all-inclusive of 1.6%, or in a $1,000 all-inclusive fee, it's $16. The difference is $8 between 2023 and 2024. $8 for someone paying $1,000 for a room. I keep saying that over and over again. The next one talks about the wording of the new carve-out. So instead of changing the 40% to 20%, this law adds a new line to the types of hotels or types of inns or types of resorts. This adds one that calls for not one non-exclusive activity in addition to the other things, means now an apportionment of 20% of the total bill goes to the room, whereas the other 80% goes to the food, the board. So that effectively makes the tax rate back to 0.8%. So for a $1,000 bill, what this bill would do is to tax the person renting, not the resident, not the all-inclusive, but would tax the guest $8 instead of $16. So they're paying $1,000 for a bill and $8 for tax. Okay? The claim has been made that that's going to prevent people from renting this. I find that weird, that if you're going to spend $1,000 for room, spending $8 for tax is not going to stop you from buying the room. Okay, the next one talks about, basically compares what I said. So I went to Rocking Horse, reserved a room, went to Mohawk, reserved a room. Those, as my understanding, those are the only two resorts that fall under this all-inclusive fee that's being changed. A room at Rocking Horse for two nights cost $2,048. The total tax on that pre-change was $16.38. Total tax post-change, $30.77. A change of $16.38. I don't believe anyone who's spending $2,048 for a stay is going to balk at spending $32.77 per tax. Similar argument for Mohawk, different prices, basically a $2,500 room rental for the weekend costs a tax of $40.38. If you're spending $2,500 per room, you're not going to balk at a $40 tax. So then I want to keep going, continue. So one thing that I looked at then was Rocking Horse also has a resort fee. So when you book at Rocking Horse, if your room is $1,000, you have a 15% resort fee. That 15% is not taxed at all for the room tax. So they've already taken out the amenities and charged extra money for those amenities that do not, where the room tax does not apply. And you can see it actually states right here, rates are subject to 15% resort tax, 8% state tax,
and 1.6% hotel tax. The resort fee is added to provide and maintain the ranch amenities. So they already have broken that out separately from the overall charge. They've added that to the charge. Okay. The next piece is there's been some, the next one is a extra room through Mohonk, and you can see what the taxes are there. They do not have a resort fee. It's just the 1.6% of the total charge is taxed. Okay, last, I want to compare room rates. So one of the arguments that have been made is that of the, I'm going to call it $1,000 because that's an easier number to work with, 20% of that is for the room. Okay, so in Mohonk, $1,402 a night room, if it's 20% of that's for the room itself, so that's right, if the overall charge is $1,402, if 20% is for the room, that means the room charge is $280. So I went to, I looked for places in Ulster County that are approximately that same cost. And I found a room at the Holiday Inn Express on Route 9W for $275. That room, so the claim, if 20% is the right number, the claim is that this room at the Holiday Inn Express with a view of 9W is the same value as a room in the number one resort in upstate that has a view of the mountains and a patio looking out over the mountains. I don't believe that those rooms are equivalent. That's just my personal opinion. And then one last thing is there's also been a claim that this increase in tax is going to be so onerous that people are not going to book them. They're going to go to neighboring counties. So if you look at the occupancy tax and the effective tax rate for all-inclusives, Ulster County is the lowest of any county in the area that even has that has an occupancy tax at all. So Green and Columbia don't have occupancy taxes. But Dutchess has one of 4%. They use the state 50% for all-inclusives instead of 40% for all-inclusives. So we've already given our all-inclusives a lower rate than surrounding counties as far as percentage goes. So the effective tax rate in Dutchess is 2%, whereas it's 1.6% in Ulster. In Sullivan, the occupancy tax is 5%. And again, they only give all-inclusives a 50% discount. So that rate is a 2.5% effective rate in Sullivan County. Green and Columbia, of course, don't have occupancy taxes. City of Hudson has an occupancy tax within the city. There is no carve-out, no exclusions. It's 4% no matter what you do. So the argument that we need to reduce our tax to give them the advantage over neighboring counties is not correct. They already have a reduced tax compared to neighboring counties. That's my pitch. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I travel a lot. I have a son that plays a lot of travel soccer up and down the East Coast, and probably been in 50 different hotels over the past couple of years. Probably the plainest rooms that I've stayed in over the past 4 or 5 years was at Mohonk Mountain House and Rocking Horse Ranch. Their beds, very clean, very plain bathroom, and a TV. Actually, Mohonk, you have to request a TV and they bring up a little TV for you. Small, it's basic. We stayed in Jersey 2 weekends ago, had a double room, kitchen, leather couch, multiple flat screen TVs for a little over $200. When I stayed at Rocking Horse Ranch a couple of years ago, a 2-day stay resulted in a $19.27 in occupancy tax, which you do the math, how much would that would it take for me to pay $19.27 at a Comfort Inn or one of these regular hotels? You're getting horseback riding, you're getting laser tag, water skiing, ice skating, a water park, musical acts, a small zoo, golfing, rock climbing, depending on which all-inclusive you're talking about. The idea that you're there and the room, it's a bed tax. You're paying for the room. That's what the bed tax is for. They also pay sales tax. I paid almost $200 in sales tax off of 2 days. The number of jobs these all-inclusives are supplying, high-paying jobs, the real tourism that they're bringing in, the amount of money they spend to bring people in and advertise themselves. The whole idea of a bed tax, and like my colleague just said, some counties choose not to have a bed tax. To me, it really is, and I'm no friend of these owners necessarily. I've been critical on other deals that they've been involved in. But on this, I happen to think it's pretty fair to charge them about 1%. And when you pay $1,000 a night and they have hundreds of people working there, the only reason you're staying overnight is so that you can basically be at a resort, and it's a theme park, basically, that you're there morning through night, you go to bed and sleep, you get up early in the morning and get back out to that theme park where all these people are employed. So I actually think it's pretty fair. I mean, you tell me $10 a night is what they're basically paying in bed tax, which is more than any hotel is paying. You could make the argument we could go further down. I'd be happy. I'd honestly be happy to go to 0% on an all-inclusive, because I don't think that was what the intent was. And as lawmakers, I think we always have to be aware. I was talking to John about this the other day. The intent, that's what why the Supreme Court sits around reading our forefathers' essays to try to decide what the intent was of the law. What is the intent? Was the intent, does anyone here think the intent of the bed tax was to nail all-inclusives because rich people go there and they can afford it? No, the intent of the bed law was to give the counties and cities an ability to create a little bit of revenue off people that are staying at hotels. It was created, the mechanism was created far before short-term rentals. It didn't even have them in mind, though I think it does apply to them. I don't think the wording is perfect. I think we need to improve it as we go on. I think we need to have a real subcommittee and go through and better define. I'd like to just wipe out anyone's ability but the all-inclusives. I think there is only two that are going to have to use this, because the other all-inclusives, and we have a couple of others, portion out their bills. And that's what it's a business model that we're kind of punishing with these two, where they want one bill. They want to be able to give the consumer one bill and then have them have the entire use of the entire park. And because that's their business model and it helps them and it helps their customers, we're punishing them by wanting to put a tax that was never meant. It's not a horseback riding tax. It's not a laser tag tax. It's not an ice skating tax, a skiing tax, a golfing tax. It's a bed tax. And what we're trying to do as legislators here is make it a bed tax while respecting these huge employers and what they do. I think it's completely fair, and I honestly think we're right where we need to be, around 1%. And don't forget that 1% is still getting far more in bed tax revenue than other rooms that look like that around the county.
Yes, thank you. This is good information, but I think there are some gaps that are really important and that tend to skew our understanding. So you have said many times, and it's here, effective tax. It's effective occupancy tax. So the all these customers pay sales tax on the entire bill. On your example, $1,000 for two nights, or $1,000 a night if it's $2,000 for two nights, they would be paying 8.25% sales tax and an additional occupancy tax that is at the level that you're describing here. So I created for the working group a summary. I think it's a two-page summary, and I don't think it was sent to all legislators, so we should get that sent to everybody. And Amber Feaster, who is the legislative fiscal analyst who worked with the working group, is working on a set of frequently asked questions that I'll try to for the Ways and Means before session next week. But these numbers are, so let's look at the page one. The effective occupancy tax would be 0.08. On the second page, it would be the effective occupancy rate was 1.6. On the next page, this non-passive activity, it needs to be more than once. So in that definition there, it's not that an all-inclusive that has a non-passive activity is eligible for the 20% apportionment. It's more than one. And the working group defined non-passive activity because if you look at the rest of the chart, it just says other charge, which could be, as somebody said in a public hearing, you know, a large to-go mug, or we were worried that it could be something like a basketball court that counts as an other charge. So
our definition may not be perfect. We think it needs to be tested. But a non-passive activity that is described in the law as substantial, continuous, and what's the third one? Ongoing is the same as continuous, but that is can be something that there is an ongoing investment by the venue. So we think that that will keep us with just the short list. It is not true that only Mohonk or Rocking Horse could be considered all-inclusive. That term does not appear in the laws that we're working with. But they were ones that had more than one of these activities, and we thought that was a break point. It may need to be more than five of these activities if we find that some of the others that are in Ulster County and describe themselves as all-inclusive on the internet come to claim this, and all they have is a basketball court and a swimming pool. We might have to adjust this law. But I think right now, if they have just a basketball court and a swimming pool, they do not qualify because the basketball court does not require that ongoing, continuous input. On the next page, it's the same thing. It's occupants, it's tax. On the next page, the actual charges at Rocking Horse, that 15% resort fee is not a tax. It gets added in, and the customer is taxed on that resort fee. So if it's $1,000, either the resort fee is already included, or it's $1,150, and they get taxed, sales tax on all of that, then an occupancy tax on whatever we decide is the correct proportion of their total charge that actually relates to their room. And it is exactly what Legislator Maloney said. These rooms were created in the course of a case of Mohonk, I think 100 years ago. They're small because they were made for smaller people. They have not had complete renovations and been made modern. Part of the lure of that site is that it is a historic site. And so there is less money put into their renovations, upkeep, so that what you see on the comparable room rates, the Mohonk room and that Holiday Inn Express King Suite, depending upon what the customer is looking for, the customer is getting really pretty much a comparable room, but they are paying, our working group would say, 80% for the view, for the extra canoeing and the activities that require additional staff. They're paying for the housing that these resorts include, which is now up to substantial levels of housing for their employees. And on the last page, it's just simply cherry picking to take Greene and Columbia County out of the addition when you figure out what the effective rate is. If you consider all those six that were listed here, which are themselves chosen, you get an average rate, if you include all of them, of 3%. So it's not true that, you know, we're, you know, such an outlier. When you include all, even if you only, if you left out the city of Hudson, it'd be similar. But you can't leave out the neighboring counties that charge zero occupancy tax when calculating how we do relative to our surrounding neighbors. That's just not, you know, it's just not fair. So the working group went through all of this. I don't think there's anything new in what we're seeing here. We looked at all of this and tried to decide what made sense. We did look in detail at materials from these two venues, and they showed less than 20% of their costs going to their room and the upkeeps of those rooms. We thought going less than 20% didn't make sense. We thought there was some fluff fudge factor in there. But 15%, 18%, I think, are the exact numbers that those two venues gave us. And we felt it was very well substantiated. So I would just say, oh, and one final point. I don't think anybody that supports this is claiming that the customer would flinch at $8 or $16. It's that when you multiply $8 of occupancy tax on addition to sales tax, and you multiply that by the 100 customers in a given day, and then you multiply that by 365 days, you get up to some substantial numbers. And these venues work by making changes in the prices that they charge when they hit certain price points. So if fuel costs go up, they may have to change the cost that they put on their package. If the labor costs go up, they pay more to their employees, they might have to change the price they put on their package. If we put this occupancy tax on at a certain level, they might have to change the price they offer for the package. And that's what they're coming to us and saying, is you are forcing us towards a price point where we have to charge more, and we don't want to do that. So I've had people say, well, they don't want to do that because they want to keep their profit margins. The working group did not get data that would allow us to assess their profit margins. We do know that they are continuing to operate by having family members run their venue. And we know that they primarily have families who come and use their resources, families with small children, not high-end customers who like throw money around loosely. We do know that the Pine Grove Ranch did go out of business with multiple factors, but could have been sold if it was such a big high profit margin activity to do. So I think we need to really get inside this. The working group tried to do that. And I would just ask for people, you know, to bring their questions to us. And I think we have a good starting point. If we do this and we find that too many venues come in, we can make it more than one non-passive recreational activity. If it, you know, if we find there are other problems, we can address them. But I don't see what more we can do at this point unless, you know, there are legislators who want to come in and join the working group and look more deeply at the information and then, you know, challenge us on our interpretation of the data we looked at. So thank you for hearing me out on that.
Legislator Roberts.
Legislator Harmon can go. She's a member of this committee.
Go ahead.
Thank you. One, this has not been, we have not given the legislation as written an opportunity to give us information to show what the results of this will be. We can wait, and if it's necessary, we can revisit this. Also, I'm, you know, luxury resorts aren't struggling. It's just sort of a disingenuous starting point. And you can't access these extras without the room. So to say, well, you know, just look at the room is also disingenuous. You know, you can't go to Rocking Horse for the day.
They do offer a day charge.
They did not when I looked for my kids. So I would suggest that that might be their workaround to this, right? They're making the case they want you to see. I have a problem with that. Their resort fee isn't our concern. Their failure to renovate their rooms isn't our concern. That they provide employee housing also gives me pause because it creates a company store situation, which has historically never worked for anyone. That's its own problem. They're claiming that they are somehow taking the hit. They're not. So the degree of disingenuous information that we have been given as a starting point for why this carve out is necessary gives me great pause. And if anything, it seems to me that we should be going in the other direction when we're talking about luxury resorts. Luxury is luxury. So to lower that tax rate, that's everything we're not supposed to do. lower the rates for the wealthy is everything we are not supposed to be doing. And I just cannot come up with a way to support this. I've waited and looked, and this is bad government.
Mr. Roberts?
Yeah, thank you. I don't think the numbers at the working group. First, Mr. Chairman, thank you for creating that working group, and Legislator Nolan for chairing it. Your committee did a great job, that work you did. It was kind of an extension of what we tried to accomplish in December when we almost passed this amendment. You know, the numbers that you created and the tax is not disingenuous, it's fair. It's not bad government to lower taxes. It's actually bad government to raise taxes. On one hand, we're giving tax breaks to the wealthy. I guess the Turks are wealthy. I don't own Mohawk, but we can give hundreds of thousands of dollars to wealthy developers that, you know, to create affordable housing. That makes sense. They're already millionaires, and we're giving them money. I mean, we can't have a double standard and hypocrisy on the sixth floor here. But the Turks give a lot back to the community of Plattekill and Highland and Lloyd. They have community day where disadvantaged children go and tour the place. I don't think Holiday Inn Express has community day and bring the disadvantaged kids through the Holiday Inn and show them the hallways. Nobody would show up. And you're paying $285 for a Holiday Inn Express on the freeway. I think you're getting ripped off. But we should pass this and move along in this sad chapter here.
Lester Hanson.
As one of the legislators that served in the working group, I am proud to have served on it. And my colleagues that was on it as well. We had a lot of data that came before us. We sat with it, we met often, we looked at it. And as far as, and I know it's separate, but as far as these resorts that happen to provide housing, I think that perhaps maybe we can look to them to see how they've done that. For many, many years, they provide housing, they provide meals. During COVID, they continued to provide for their employees that if they needed a meal. And again, I know that that's separate, but we need to look at everything together. And they do give back to the community in many, many ways. I know that Mohonk gave, I think, $25,000 from their gingerbread display for the, I think it was the Hudson Valley Food Bank. They are definitely partners for us in the county. And we did our homework. We did what we were supposed to do in that working group. And I also agree that we need to pass this.
Leslie Collins.
I'm going to kind of address some of the things that I've heard here.
This is not about punishing anybody. This is about getting the equitable tax for different organizations. It's not about punishing a home place. It's about saying you've already got a discount here. You've already got a discount to 40% of your price. That seems fair to me. Also, the sales tax for an all-inclusive, I mean, the point was made that they're paying sales tax on the entire fee. Well, if you're a guest and you don't have all-inclusive, you are going to go for lunch, you're going to go for breakfast, you're going to go for dinner, you're going to pay sales tax on those. It doesn't change the sales tax. It just changes who pays the sales tax. Whether it's the restaurants, whether it's all-inclusive, yes, we're getting sales tax on all of those meals. It doesn't change. It doesn't affect it. It's the same thing. It's been said that the language in the law needs work. I totally agree with that. I don't understand
non-passive recreational.
Yeah, I don't know understand how that language is applied in all cases. To me, it could be applied to they clean the bathroom in the lobby every day, because it's something that falls within that category. They do it all the time. It's continuous. It's expensive. Cleaning the bathrooms in the lobby would apply to that.
Not recreational, but
well, you know, some people it might be going to the bathroom might be a good thing. I don't know. So I didn't hand pick the counties. These are the neighboring counties. I included Green and Columbia with zero. If I was hand picking, I would not have included them. So I'm showing the exact data that's all of the neighboring counties. And I don't, you know, I don't have any, I assume that these owners, if you tell, as the legislature said, that they are very civically responsive. They are, they would, that's great. That's, but that's different. It doesn't mean we give them a sales tax break. You know, it doesn't mean just because they're civically responsible that we give them sales tax breaks or occupancy tax breaks. You know, that's a separate topic. And then that they provide housing, to me, I don't know what that means. Does that mean that they don't pay their employees enough to get their own housing? I mean, that's a possibility. That's one way to look at it. I have gone online to these resorts, and their rates are $13 an hour. No, I've looked. You can go online. It's $15 an hour is the rate for the lowest level employees. Sorry. And that's not a livable rate, a livable wage. So again, there's a lot to dig into this. I would be happy to join the committee. I'd be happy to look at this, take another month and look at this and see what if we can come to an agreement. That'd be fine with me. I don't, you know, so I can't make motions. I'm not in the committee, but there might be a motion made to postpone so we can reconsider this.
Yeah, I mean, I frankly agree with everything that Legislator Collins is saying, and I find it really hard. I've been in a lot of the hotels in Ulster County. One example is, you know, delivering food to people that are in there on emergency housing vouchers or, you know, emergency housing placement, and I stayed at Mohonk. I stayed there on my wedding night because it was a special occasion. And we didn't get to use the resort. We, you know, were in the room, and it was still worth it because it was a really special night, and that room was special. It was incredible. We were facing the Catskills. It was a wonderful way to spend our wedding night, and there's a reason why we're at Mohonk and not the Holiday Inn for that wedding night. And it's not because it's not reflective of 20% of, you know, that room being worth $280. That just does not. You cannot look at these rooms. Maybe if your only judge is how big the TV is, Mohonk isn't the place for you. If your only judge is how big the TV is, but maybe the Holiday Inn has a bigger TV, but the way those rooms are set up, it is a luxury resort. I've been at hotels all over the world, and I can tell you that there really just is no comparison, and it's really tough to accept that that's the same, that this room at Mohonk is the same as a room with the Holiday Inn. It sounds like there's information that the working group looked at that we haven't had the chance to review. So I'm like, right now, I'm a no on this. Would that information change things? Maybe it would. I would, and in fact, I will make a motion to postpone a month, and I hope to get a second on that, so that we can maybe absorb some of that information. So my motion is to postpone.
Point of order, there is a motion on the floor to adopt the resolution.
You can definitely postpone a resolution after there's a motion on the floor.
There's a motion. He can withdraw his motion, and she can withdraw it. But the motion on the table is a motion to adopt.
We'll vote on that first.
Yep. So you're telling me that when we move a resolution for discussion, that
he didn't move it for discussion. He moved it to adopt.
Mm-hmm. Who moved it to adopt?
Legislator Kitchen did. Okay. Legislator Hanson seconded it.
That's fine.
So there's a motion on the floor. Is there any further discussion on this issue? I think we
just have one point. Does the chair possibly?
Yes, of course.
So I just wanted to bring up, I think March is here, yes. The county executive did ask March, based on some comments that were made at the Economic Development Committee, to look a little bit more into the occupancy tax collection. So we do. I know March has already had conversations with the finance team on this. Based on the concerns that were raised during the economic development meeting, just in terms of how the occupancy tax has been collected in the past. Based, I believe, on your Leader Maloney hinted at a previous audit.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
You're on the committee. Let's hear hands up. Do you have anything to say?
Call the question.
I think we're going to call the question. We have two more items to get through today.
Mm-hmm. Could I make one comment?
We're going to call the question. I would request a roll call.
Chair Kovacs.
Pass.
Deputy Chair Levine.
Pass.
Legislator Gavaris. Legislator Harmon.
No.
Legislator Hanset.
Yes.
Legislator Kitchen.
Yes.
Legislator Ushetel.
No.
Chair Criswell.
I'm going to be a no, and I want to explain that. I would have really preferred that we had the opportunity to postpone it, get back to the committee, get all these questions answered. Since that was not withdrawn, I'm afraid I'm going to have to be a no.
Chair Kovacs.
I vote yes.
Deputy Chair Levine.
What's the role, Madam Clerk?
You have 3 yeses, 4 noes.
Tie vote will not advance this, correct?
That's correct.
I will be a yes on this for today.
Motion is defeated, 4-4.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to say I think it's a very good conversation, and certainly we can revisit this issue in the future, but certainly see very compelling arguments on both sides, but I don't know that postponing a month, frankly, would do anything to anyone's opinion, with all due respect to everyone here. But I think it's a good conversation. We should continue to have it. Yes, sir.
I was the one that brought up in economic development. I think there was an audit from 9 or 10 years ago. I couldn't find it on your site, so it even predates what you have up. But it went around and showed that there were normal hotels that were kind of, you know, that probably could be, I think we could further our language we've been using forever. And as far as voting no, because there's more questions that, I mean, with all due respect, Chair, you put this secret working group together. I wasn't even told. I wasn't even invited. No.
Just a moment.
It's my legislation, and I wasn't even told about this working group until several of these secret meetings were done. Was there a recording? And now we're voting no on something and saying I don't have enough information. You put the working group, whatever this pretend working group is, should have been a subcommittee.
Thank you. I don't want to continue this, but I will offer Legislator Nolan a brief chance to reply, and then we're going to move on.
I appreciate that. Thank you. The notice of this working group was sent around to the entire legislature.
Absolutely not.
I have a copy of the email. And I just want to say that I really appreciate the people who asked us to focus in on the equity aspect of this, because my understanding is that we have the authority to raise the occupancy tax. We don't have the authority to raise the sales tax. I would prefer, I'm very much willing, as not all my colleagues who worked on this are, to raise all kinds of taxes on people.
Right.
But I'm not really happy using an occupancy tax to raise money from people when they don't put their expenses towards occupancy. So I think we ought to look at that, and I hope we get a chance to do that.
Thank you, Legislator. Resolution number 202, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 4 of 2024, a local law amending Article 2 of the Administrative Code for the County of Ulster.
You're reading it at the same moment.
Local law number 10 of 2008 in relation to certain employment restrictions to be held on Tuesday, May 14th, 2024, 7:05 p.m. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Is there a motion to adopt?
I don't know if there was discussion.
Yeah.
Tina, can you clarify your motion?
And did you skip resolution 201?
I'm sorry.
Just not on
201.
We did it first.
Updating the points into law.
Legislator Hanset, can you clarify your motion? It was the motion to discuss. Yes.
Discuss. Is there a second?
Kitchen.
All in favor?
All right.
Both being there, none. Discussion. Legislator Maloney.
What did we just vote on?
Just on the
discussion.
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 Okay, so we voted on a motion to discuss.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm just trying to keep track of the way that we're running.
I think we should be, to make sure. I think it's a good idea to clarify your motion when you make
certainly.
Thank you. Mr. Maloney.
So I've spoken to people through the years, and at different conversations, the same thing ends up being said. No, that can't happen. We have the Fontainebleau law. What people don't realize is after the charter, it was never updated. only the legislature under the Fuentantillo law cannot. Basically, the only thing the Fuentantillo law does is stop the chair from appointing a former legislator to be a confidential secretary. This will update it where no elected official for a certain number of years would be allowed in the county elected official would be permitted to be appointed to a managerial position for a set number of years after being an elected official, which I think is good government and probably 100% of our constituents would appreciate.
Can I say something, Chairman? I want to recognize legislator number one.
Yeah, 100% of your constituents would not, because I would not. And this to me just it seems to equate working in county government with working in a high security industry where there are trade secrets, where you prevent anybody who's been in there from going out and selling those trade secrets by having these lengths of time at following your service that you can't work with a, you know, within the industry or in certain sectors. And I just want to know how I'm missing out on all these trade secrets that would give me some sort of advantage once I finish my service. This law is written would punish somebody who has served as a county legislator, a person in the government, the county government, by restricting their employment following that service. Now, I just don't see the connection, what benefit we provide to anybody, because I don't think we carry with us anything. I mean, I don't think I have any, I can't see that status or power, what is it that we think is being parlayed when we go to our next position? I think there's an attempt to use a model from a whole different sector of society, and I don't see the benefit to any particular individual of this law.
That's a good question. I have nothing to say. I might end up for this back meeting at 12:01.
I'm sorry. I probably should have yielded to you as a member.
No, you spoke about 10 times. I haven't spoken once. Keep raising my hand. So I decided I'm not going
to
talk.
This would be a great time for the chair to step in and not
okay.
Have a few members.
Yes, you're right. I just offered my apology. I'm sorry.
Last week,
Anyway.
Councilor Hanson. I'd like to make a motion to amend this resolution to 3 years instead of 5.
Is there a second? A second.
I'm agreeable.
We need to vote on the. We need to vote on the motion to amend the resolution.
Well, hold on. We can discuss it.
Well, I could just put that on the floor. So that we have a motion.
So I'm on the amendment. I can make it germane to the amendment.
Go ahead.
So I don't really see who this benefits. I guess the idea is that the fear is we're going to cut some deal that, you know, is going to get executed years from now, that we're going to be employed by the county after a legislator or right? I mean, this is the idea is to prevent former elected officials like us from working for the county. Am I reading that correct for a period of time? I mean, I'll point out that there are a number of members of our legislature, past and present, who have come out of careers in the public sector. And for someone who develops a skill set in this space to be barred from going into a career in the public sector, you know, as an employee after being an elected official, that really doesn't seem fair to. I mean, the one
committee never let me speak.
Hold up. Do you want to go back to that topic?
No, leave it. Have a good night.
If people aren't on the committee, don't get a chance to speak. Why should the committee come?
You may continue.
Thank you. I'll speak for myself. I mean, I saw this, like, I have, you know, I have no specific plan of ever working for the county, but if I was to retire as a legislator, which I intend to do at some point and still have a career, as someone who studied political science in college, who interned for the county 10 years ago, who, you know, would like to have options open for them, to see us limiting
our ability to apply for a job doesn't seem to make sense to me. And I feel like I could say this with a clean conscience because I have absolutely no plan to retire as a legislator and apply for a job. But I could see someone in my position, you know, not. And I don't see how the taxpayers benefit from preventing people from being able to enter the workforce in that regard. I don't know if this is meant to target a specific person or I just don't. Maybe someone is trying to target people like me that love government and want to make it their career and might not want to be a legislator forever. I don't know. Those are my thoughts. I don't support this at all. We're 3 years or five to tie it back to the amendment.
Thank you. Senator Mullen.
Yeah, I would love to do a poll in the community and see the numbers on this one, but the idea that you'd be an elected official,
it's about public service. There's a sacrifice, or there used to be. And the idea that somebody could be a legislator for a couple of years, be fairly agreeable with the executive, not challenge much, support everything they do, and then turn around in a year after walking away and get a $100,000 a year job, if you don't think that leaves a sour taste in the community's mouth, where that job could go to somebody else fresh out of college that decided not to be a public servant. This is about public service. And when you're up here, it should never even be in the back of your head that you're ever going to work up here in a high-paid management position. You can go take a test, like 90% of the rest of the county. It's that top 10%.
Clarity, wouldn't this apply to all positions?
We could certainly amend it, but it was meant for managerial appointments. It's an appointment. You don't get appointed to tested union positions. But
I didn't say that.
This is about good government, and if we're going to have a good government and you're going to be an independent thinker and you're going to challenge and work for the people first and not worry about relationships and future jobs, then this is a great resolution. If you don't look at government that way, then it's not such a good resolution. If you have in the back of your mind that you may want a high-paid job given to you someday soon after you retire from the legislature, it's not a good resolution for you. But I don't think that way. I'm up here thinking about 30 and 40 years down the line and what this community is going to look like, making the tough decisions that aren't always popular, especially with another branch of government. Why is there a Fontillo law to begin with? They obviously had an issue in this county.
I'm just curious, is there any precedent for this anywhere else? I've never seen it. Like on any level of government, I've just never seen it.
Answer that. I've seen
yes.
certain restrictions on.
Absolutely.
But usually it's 1 year or 2 years.
I'm not being weird about it. I just have never seen it. So I'd love to better understand.
At the town level,
we even have.
There are some.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's restrictions. Mark Ryder probably should have gotten approval to go work at the RRA. There's law on Chris Kelly probably should have gotten approval from the legislature. We just don't follow through on anything anymore or care.
I'm going to Chase.
My concern here is that we're forfeiting potential expertise gained from the insights of reading all of our legislation and all of these resolutions as carefully as legislators should be, that then if somebody does want to turn around and serve with that wealth of knowledge, if the longer we delay that option, the more obsolete their knowledge becomes. And I do recognize that that might theoretically in some way have a benefit for them, and I share that concern. But I, all things considered, I think that the risk to the expertise we could lose if somebody is called to serve in that way is greater than the risk of misuse.
Okay, I'm going to call the question on the motion to adopt the amendment as presented, and the amendment was to reduce from 5 years to 3 years, just to clarify. All in favor? Aye.
Yes.
Opposed. Okay. Any opposed?
Probably opposed.
Two opposed. The amendment is adopted. So it's 3 years, not five. Any further discussion on the motion? On the resolution?
Resolution as amended.
On the resolution as amended.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All we're voting on is a public hearing.
I appreciate the clarification, Mr. Chairman. This is a, sending it to a public hearing. Seeing no further discussion, I'm going to call for a roll call vote for clarity's sake.
On the resolution as amended.
On the resolution amended, thank you.
Sure. Chair Kovacs.
Yes.
Deputy Chair Levine.
Pass.
Legislator Gavaris.
We need a motion to actually adopt it, if that's what you're trying to do. Because you only have a motion to discuss.
No, they...
It was a motion to discuss.
To amend to three instead of five.
That
was Hansett and then Kovacs.
Yeah. Where's the motion to adopt?
Now you never need a motion to adopt.
No, there was no motion to adopt.
Well, Legislator Hansett made a motion to discuss, I believe.
Right, and then it was.
That's a distinction.
I think Kovacs, I have no.
I thought I adopted, but maybe not.
Okay, is there a motion to adopt the resolution as amended? Legislator Hansett, is there a second?
Second.
Again, Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Pass.
Legislator Gavaris.
Public hearing purposes, yes.
Legislator Harmon.
Also for public hearing purposes, yes.
Legislator Hansett.
Yes.
Legislator Kitchen.
Yes.
Legislator Uchitel.
I'll vote for the public hearing, yes.
Chair Criswell.
I always vote yes for public hearing.
Deputy Chair.
In the interest of unanimity for a public hearing, aye. Okay, the motion is adopted. Thank you. Number six, late resolution 207, staff safety policy to maximize and prioritize the procurement of safe, effective, and comprehensive outpatient and substance use disorder withdrawal and stabilization services in and for the County of Ulster. Is there a motion?
Motion to discuss.
Motion to discuss. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
All right.
Any discussion? President Hansen.
I just want clarification on the contract of this service. I've been told, yes, there is a contract in place. I've been told, no, the contract has expired.
So
I could just get clarification on that, please.
They were awarded, MI, was awarded a contract for 1 year after a competitive RFP process with an option to extend for 1 year. They were given that option to extend, and they elected to extend. So technically, there's an active contract with Tamati for 2024. We haven't put forth the contract yet for 2024 because we've been working with them due to some of the concerns that have been raised by the Councilor office to come up with an amended contract that hopefully folks can feel comfortable with. We want to make sure that we are being really specific and discreet with what we're funding and making sure that there's financial oversight. We also want to see if we can support their bolstering their administrative capabilities, which was discussed earlier on this evening. So that's the process we've been going through with them. They're also applying for a license from the state, and they should be hearing back within the next couple of weeks. We've been waiting on the outcome. Yes, technically they do have
it. Mr.
Hanson. I still don't understand. Because you're like, technically there is a contract,
yes.
but also there's not a contract that has been signed.
They have an option to extend their contract for their original contract.
And they do. Do we? Also?
The legislature signed off on a contract for 1 year with an option to extend for 1 year. So that option to extend has been accepted. So it is. They have extended the contract.
And then the second, but you said at the end there some, and I missed that part about a contract or something with the state. What was that?
So they have a license, and Tarek, you jump in. They have a license to operate at 368 Broadway for their outpatient services. They have expanded those services, which is part of what we funded with opioid settlement funds. They're getting a license for that expanded service, and they are going through that vetting process right now with OASAS, the State Office of Addiction Supports and Services, and they're going to hear back shortly.
If I can add, so they have a three-year operating certificate that goes from October 23 into September of 2026. What they're trying to do is to expand the services and include that within their operating certificate. In order to expand, you have to get an approval for that. They put in an application, and they're waiting to hear back.
Did that answer your questions?
For clarification, we had a contract, and that you're saying that they can move forward with the contract, but what if we don't agree or we're not comfortable with that contract? Where do we have that say in that?
If I may, we put forth, when we are ready to put forth an amended contract, that contract amendment goes to the legislature, which will then debate the terms of the amended contract.
And when will that take place?
You're waiting to hear back from their process with OASAS, which should be within the next couple of weeks, after which we will, if we can come up with something that we think that we're comfortable with, we will advance something, which I think would fall to either May or June.
So today is April 11th. It expired on December 31st. So where do we sit with this?
Their contract was through December 23 with an option to extend for another year.
Oh, 6 months.
Through 2024. They said yes. The department said yes. So they have a letter stating that their contract is.
So I think to clarify, their contract is good through the renewal contract is good through December of this year. It's very common in a commercial. I'm going to recognize Controller Gallagher.
So today is the first day I'm learning about a contract extension. And in fact, I have a copy of the exercise option to extend the contract. And I find it very curious that the exercise option appears to be dated around the same exact time that the contract was fully executed. So I don't know why, and that was in May, June of last year. Why are we just learning about this today? There is a contract amendment sitting in my queue for approval. It is not to extend the term of the contract. It is to allow the purchase of a hybrid vehicle. So I am not seeing what we're talking about in the financial system, and maybe we're waiting until there's further approvals. But I can tell you right now that we have not reached a level of comfort that would allow us to make payments to the organization at this time.
Good. Can I just clarify, who offers the renewal to we offer to them?
Yes, the purchasing department has a process where if the language is in the contract, they'll generate a letter telling them that there's a language in the contract and if they would like to pursue it.
So we sent the letter out?
To them,
okay.
Yes.
And when was that?
June of 2023, which was before any audit started, I believe, before any comptroller audit.
In June of 23, we asked them if they wanted to renew for 24.
Yes.
Thank you. Legislator Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Their contract expires on the end of last year, December 31st. From what I read, the attorneys read, there is no option to extend. It's not extended until we approve. County executive might want to extend this, but it's not going to happen. The attorneys both agree. Or at least my minority attorney agrees that there is no extension on this. What this does, what my resolution puts forward, it does it. Why would we give extend a contract that, with drug money that's going to be saving kids' lives and they're not ready to do the work? What world do we live in here? Just double down on evil. But this contract starts a bidding process now. It allows that drug money, the settlement money, to get in the hands. And we're not excluding Somati from reapplying or putting a bid in.
from what I understand and what I read, there is nine other companies, qualified companies, probably maybe more qualified than Somati, that could do this job that they're doing right now. Thank you.
What's your comments?
I need clarification on what's going on. So we, according to the executive office, right, so we signed a contract with them last year that gave them a one-year contract with the with their option, not our option, their option to extend for a year.
There's a mutual option.
Mutual option.
Okay, so they've signed it, so their side has signed it. We have not yet signed it. Is that correct?
Our side
was signed as well. So both sides were signed. So in that situation, then the contract is good through the end of this year. Now, I understand also that our contracts always allow us to terminate if we choose to terminate at any time. Is that correct? So we could still terminate this if we decided that we wanted to terminate. I'm not saying we want to do that or not do that, but I'm just saying we could do that. So until we basically validate that contract at the legislature, it's still not necessarily done. It's a long process, I guess, right? They've signed their extension. The executive team has signed their extension is that correct? You guys have signed the extension. So it has been brought to us because we have concerns, which have been shared with this legislative body before. And my understanding is that there's working through those concerns. They may be successful. They may not be successful. We don't know that yet. If they're successful, then you're going to bring it to the legislative body to approve the contract that they've signed for the extension and that we've signed for an extension. And at that point, we get to say yes or no as a legislative body. Is that correct? Okay.
Can I get some points of clarity here?
You know, I'd like to see a legal memorandum from my attorney. Just putting all the dates in and when the renewal was offered and when it was signed. It's still a little hazy to me.
Chair?
Yes, Leslie.
Through the chair to anybody that can answer. Is there actually, was there an extension clause in the original, was it there when we approved it?
Chris, what are you,
question to
well,
the
that's,
chair.
That's what I'm asking for in legal memorandum, so we can have a breakdown of.
But it can't be done without legislative approval, correct, the extension?
You would have had to sign the original contract. Yes, the language would have been in the original contract that you
signed. Is it in the original contract?
I'm told it was, which is why this purchasing,
has
which is why the letter was drafted.
Who told you?
Purchasing.
And
county attorney, yes. But I'm happy to get a memo together.
Was it in our original resolution? If it wasn't in our
hold on.
No, but this is important to get this right.
Which is why I've asked for a memorandum.
So at the very least, I think we should have a motion to postpone this to get the memorandum.
I'm going to call on Lester Stone.
Yeah. So I am my thing is I want to see the comptroller's work get resolved. I want to see them have financial controls that we're comfortable with. I'm not comfortable with them currently. I'll be satisfied when the comptroller is satisfied. I'm also very confused about why this is a late resolution. It seemed like it was introduced just after the health committee met, not before, so that they could review this. We have the commissioner of mental health here, who we work with month after month on a variety of topics and all related to these things. I mean, we're here at Laws and Rules, you know, debating, you know, this type of work when this is not germane to this committee. It's because it's a late resolution and the timing of it is why it's before us right now, which I don't agree with at all. So I make a motion to refer this to the health committee, which will buy us time to get the memo from the county executive so we can get that straight and have this discussed where it belongs.
Is there a second to the motion? Second, Lizard Harmon.
Mr. Chair,
yes, Leslie Roberts.
I think my colleague, Peter Chattel, asked me an indirect question why it's late. It was late because myself, an attorney in the clerk's office, put a lot of work into this, right? And it just happened to show up on a Friday.
I just want to clarify, as chair, this was added to my agenda as a late resolution. It went through the requirements under our rules and qualify as a late resolution. So maybe we should explore the rules of the legislature just to...
I'm actually satisfied with the minority leader's explanation.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Very good. So there is a motion to refer to the health committee, and we have a second. Further discussion?
On the referral?
On the referral, yes.
I'd just like to remind everybody, I think just about everybody in this room has real concerns about
some of the facts that have come out surrounding this organization and the way our money was spent. There are other organizations out there, like my colleague, Legislator Roberts, points out, and we have an absolute, you know, emergency out there, and the money is sitting there. You know, to postpone this a month is not like postponing any other resolution a month. It's not like the bed tax or something else. This is about getting money to organizations that can save lives. So if we kick this can down the road, we're kicking hundreds of thousands of dollars down the road that could be put into effect immediately.
Well, I think it's important that we have a clarity as to if we are in contract with somebody, which is why I like a legal opinion. We don't want to go out to an RFP and still be in a contract with somebody. That's my issue.
To that point, we've got our attorneys reading the contract saying we aren't in it. All we have is a through the grapevine that purchasing says there's some contract that doesn't exist. You know, if this ends up getting postponed and it turns out that our attorneys were correct and we sat on this money that could have went out and maybe saved lives because of something that turns out to be incorrect information coming out of the executive branch of government and purchasing, then that's a real problem, and I hope we don't just graze over it.
And it's possible that our council can address whether, in fact, you know, their opinion is we the county can contract with the body.
No, well, I like the comptroller. I learned for the first time this evening that there was some purported extension. I can only tell you that I read the contract that was approved last year, and I didn't see any express option contained in the four corners of that contract. If the county attorney or executive staff want to point out to me where that is in the contract, I'd be happy to review it.
Yeah, could I ask one or both of you to also provide a memo?
Sure. We'll work on it. Sure.
Thank you.
Motion to refer.
Motion to refer to the health committee.
Let's speak on the referral.
Briefly.
Thank you. As my colleague, Mr. Maloney, said that, you know, we need to get this out there now. That's why I put this resolution forward. We could debate it next Tuesday on the floor. In the meantime, we can get all the memos you want, which are going to prove that we are right. The executive branch is wrong and stalling. For whatever reason, we need to get that money out. God forbid if we lose another child because we're not helping them. And I, if you're going to vote on the postponement, I'd rather have you vote no, and I'll bring up a petition to discharge.
Okay. This is a motion to refer to the health committee. Press long roll.
Chair Kovacs.
No.
Deputy Chair Levine.
Yes.
Legislator Gavaris.
I'm going to recuse for purposes of the fight.
Legislator Harmon.
Yes, refer.
Legislator Hansett.
No.
Legislator Kitchen.
No.
Legislator Uchitel.
Yes.
Chair Criswell.
Yes, to refer.
1, 2, 3, 4. What am I missing?
There's a recusal.
Give us a statement.
I have 4-3. That's right.
4-3. So motion is adopted.
You need 5. There are 8. There are 7 members on the committee with the chair present. It increases.
So it does increase. The chair increases the quorum
to 5.
Council, is that correct?
Yep.
Yes. Okay. So the motion.
So with the recusal.
Motion is defeated.
The motion to refer is defeated. You have no other motions on the table.
I would like to make a motion to adopt the resolution.
Second.
Roll call vote, please.
Okay.
This is a motion to adopt the resolution.
Chair Kovacs.
Yes.
Deputy Chair Levine.
Yes.
Legislator Skipping Gavaris. Legislator Hansett.
Yes.
Legislator Harmon.
The
You can pass.
Pass.
Legislator Kitchen.
Yes.
Legislator Uchitel.
No.
Chair Criswell.
Again, I'm going to be a no. I think this should have gone to.
Legislator Harmon.
No.
The motion is defeated. 4-3.
Same rules apply.
Yes, the same rules apply. Okay. Are there any motions on the table?
No, I'm sorry. No.
No. Okay. I thank you. The Hung Parliament. Okay.
No, do we have one?
Is your motion?
We already
discussed County of Onondaga versus State of New York. For information purposes, my resolution 188 adopting a policy that a licensed physician with experience in public health should be preferred criteria. That was already at the health committee. It failed, and I did file a petition to discharge. So it might be coming up at some point. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
A couple of comments for new business.
There's a motion on the floor. That's it.
You're not going to allow new business?
No, a motion to adjourn trumps all other things. Check all the rules. I'm not kidding, for my own purposes. You need to call a question, and that's it.
Both on the table?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Yes. And there's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Anyone else?
One opposed? Mr. Carries. Thank you.